Time for Thinking Real Estate. The Schlecky family. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing good. How are you?
Hey, good. Good, good.
Good, good.
Day before yesterday, I had an eagle fly right in front of me that had a fish in its talons.
No.
Yeah. Yeah, Ray, I was out putting up a hummingbird feeder at a place up north, and I look up, and, it's right along the shore, probably 30 yards in front of me, a bald eagle flying right through. I had three of them in front of me about two, 3 weeks ago when I was cutting grass up here. They were just flying around looking for fish. And then, as I think I mentioned before, I typically, in the warmer months, I've got an eagle that sits right at the top of a pine tree right at the corner of my lot. And sometimes there are two of them that sit there. Just they're looking for fish or small dogs.
Wow. Now, I can't top that. I can't top that. But when I walked into work today on the porch out here, there was a skunk.
Oh,
yeah. The other interesting thing is I ran into a friend from downstate out at the what's called Lumberman's Monument. It's a part of the National Park, National Forest, and actually right where they had the forest fire, too, the 6,000 acres that they got out of control on a controlled, otherwise controlled burn. But I was talking, the friend's dad was there, and he's an avid bird watcher, and he told me that on the cell tower, which is direct, I go past it every time I go to the golf course, right at the top of the cell tower is a huge osprey nest. And sure enough, as I was coming back from Lumberman's Monument, I looked up and you can see this huge nest. I haven't seen the osprey yet, but I'm going to sit right there. It's right above the TCF Bank branch, Laura, right at Wilbur Road and M55. Yeah, interesting. And then I'm waiting for the hummingbirds, and it tells me the orioles are already here. They've migrated north, so I'm trying to attract some of those, too.
Wow.
Anyway, yeah, beautiful up here. What's it like down there?
Cold.
Sunshiny. Chilly.
Is it? Yeah, it's cold up here. It's cold. It's right now 45 degrees. It was 36 when I got up this morning at 6:30. So, but anyway, purple martins are out swooping looking for insects. I don't know how many they're going to find in this cold weather.
Oh. Well, anyhow, so let's get to the topic, man.
Yeah, what's the
topic? All right,
topic?
There you go.
We're going to talk about what buyers and sellers should be doing in this market. Sellers to bring the highest dollar possible, and buyers to try and be ready for getting their offer more likely to be accepted. So,
yeah, and my view is that there is going to be a change coming here. We're already seeing some inflationary pressure brought on by what I think are two major things. One, house prices themselves. I mean, the demand has outstripped the supply very, very greatly, and so prices are going up above list price. But, again, that pent-up demand that arose as a result of the pandemic and the increased demand that arose because of the pandemic, people wanted to get out of urban areas. Now that they're working at home, they want additional space, all those sorts of things. That demand is going to dry up before too long. Plus, as a result of these inflationary pressures, you're going to see interest rates start to rise. Janet Yellen actually said something about that the other day, our Treasury Secretary. So you may start seeing a little bit of loosening in what that market may be. So from sellers' perspectives, this may be the absolute best time to get the property out there. Again, I'm not the greatest prognosticator, but I've been doing this for 49 years, and it doesn't stay the same. It changes. It's cyclical. And the other thing is that supply, lumber, steel, the things necessary for building houses and renovation, sooner or later the supply chain is going to catch up. So anyway, that's my take on why sellers ought to be thinking about this market right now. And the flip side is buyers, because of the way the market is right now, it's really tough. You want to buy this property and you're getting outbid by 2, 3, 4, 5, or 6 other prospective purchasers who are in the market at the same time because the interest rates are low. Anyway, that's my take on it, Laura. So what advice have you got for people?
Well, for sellers, You know, if you've lived in your home, probably the main people who are putting their house on the market are people who are downsizing. And if you've been in your house for 10, 20, 50 years, you got probably a lot of cleaning you have to do. So start from the top and go all the way down to the bottom and get those closets cleaned out, get rid of stuff, purge. I mean, I know if we were to put our house on the market, we'd have a little bit of a furniture issue to get rid of. But that's the biggest thing, is making sure that that house is either, I'm not a proponent of having it empty, because sometimes you got to see how the furniture fits in there. People see what will be let me think of it. I'll think of it in a minute. Buyers, I just said it to someone the other day, and for some reason I can't come up with it. Anyhow, buyers buy what they see, not what will be. So don't put your house on the market and say, well, we're going to paint that wall, or we're going to empty that garage, or take care of this stuff, because they're going to buy what they see. And if you really want to get, even though you might still get more money than you think, you could probably get more just by purging the stuff that's in your house. A deep clean. And I just got off the phone with a seller this morning, and she said, what do we need to do for the home inspection? And I said, just make sure the house is really clean. And same thing for an appraisal. Make sure the house is really clean, because once we get that price that's over what you're asking, now we got to make sure the appraisal goes through. Did you know that an appraiser is liable for the value they put on that price for 5 years after the appraisal is issued?
You mean a statute of limitations? In other words, if you can go after them for an incorrect appraisal?
Correct.
Okay, but you also have to understand that the appraisal is done for the lender. It's not done for the buyer.
Right.
And it's not done for the seller, so they're not entitled to rely upon it. There are cases that deal with this, so it's only the bank that can go after the appraisal.
Right, that's what I'm talking about. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to indicate that the buyer could go after somebody.
Or the same thing for the seller. You know, they come back with a crummy appraisal that's not done according to Appraisal Institute standards. They have no right to go after the appraiser, because the appraiser is hired by the lender. So let me also, and I've mentioned this before, not in quite some time, but are you having purchasers want to waive the home inspection in order to be able to persuade a seller, hey, this deal is solid, there aren't any conditions other than mortgage, and here's my pre-approval letter, so I'm golden, I'm good to go? Are they asking you if they should waive the home inspection?
I don't get asked that question, although I have had a few handle it a couple of different ways. If it's a house that the buyer is pretty certain that they are going to want, they may take a home inspector with them at the time of previewing the property. Another one where we've set up that we wrote an offer on, before we wrote the offer, I scheduled the home inspection so that it was done the day after the offer was accepted, and that home, so that it would be removed within a 3-day period of time as opposed to a 10-day period of time.
What's the 3-day period you're talking about? What's that about?
Well, I meant so that the home inspector can get in there, we can review any results, and then move forward with the
So do you have a contingency for home inspection, though?
It's still a contingency for home inspection, but prior to writing the offer, I line up the inspector to get in there the day after the offer is accepted.
So that it's a short contingency period. Instead of 7 or 10 days, it's 3 days is what you're saying.
Correct. So that if there is an issue, the house isn't tied up as long.
Okay.
And the other buyers are doing is they're guaranteeing the price between purchase price and appraised price. So,
in other words, they'll make up the difference if the appraisal comes in at less than what is necessary for the lender?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Are they providing proof of funds? How do you know that, in fact, if my difference is $10,000, that this prospective purchaser has a $10,000 to pony up at closing?
Yeah, they would have to provide proof of funds, just like they have to have a letter of pre-approval.
Are any sellers requiring that they post a greater deposit to make up any deficit?
I don't know that they could. I haven't seen that, but...
I don't want to leave the subject of home inspections yet, but I want to ask the question: Are you seeing purchasers upping the deposit? In other words, instead of $1,000 or $2,000, they're saying here's $5,000 or here's $10,000, in order to persuade a seller that this is truly a viable buyer.
Yes, without a doubt.
Okay, and then you're not seeing any non-refundable deposits, are you?
I've not seen. Only if the buyer wants to put something in a garage or take occupancy prior to closing.
Yeah, of course, you know my advice on that is, from a seller's point of view, you do not give up occupancy to a buyer before the closing. No way, no how. Don't do it. Because what happens is, if that deal doesn't close, the buyer gets in, finds out that there's some problem, some issue, holds up the closing. You can't just boot them out. You got to go through the eviction process. And the eviction process right now is difficult because of the closure of the courts. The Jackson County courts are still closed. You can't do in-person hearings. It's got to be a Zoom hearing. And so now, if I've got a buyer who's in there, they found a defect and they're raising that issue, now they're going to demand a trial. And getting a Zoom trial conducted on any proceeding, including eviction proceedings, is difficult these days. So under no circumstances would I advise the seller to allow the purchaser to move in. They may want to store. Go ahead.
I am seeing flexibility of possession. I just had one where we gave the seller a week with no rent. After a week, they pay a daily rate up to 3 months possession.
Yeah, I don't have as strong an objection to a seller remaining in the property following closing, because at that point, and just so long as you have a rental agreement in place, because once you close and the buyer's the owner, the tenant, the seller is now a tenant lawfully in possession. And to get if the seller's house that they were going to move into, that deal falls through or is now pushed back, that seller stays in that house. In order for the buyer to get possession, they got to go through the district court eviction process. Hold on. The saving grace for the buyer is that you've got in there, okay, they can stay in there a week rent-free, but then after that, if they don't go, what I would put in that rental agreement is it's free only if you move out on time, and if it's not, then it's X amount of dollars, and every day thereafter it's X amount of dollars. Now you can't have it so high that it's considered to be a quote penalty. It's got to be reasonably related to the damages which the buyer may suffer, but those can be substantial. So you put something in there that gives the seller incentive to get out of there, because ultimately when they get out and you now go to a district court for a judgment, you get the judgment for the amount which the seller owes. And you would typically put the amount that is anticipated to be the amount of rental from the seller, even if it's for a week free. I still would create an escrow account at the time of closing, so that if that seller isn't out, that escrow fund is being held for distribution to the purchaser to cover the purchaser's damages while the seller has refused to go. So, you know, you got to think about these things if you're not doing
possession. What's the difference between a lease and an occupancy agreement?
None. They're the same thing.
Okay.
Treated the same by the courts. Occupancy agreement, you know, the statute of fraud says that an oral agreement for the lease of property for 1 year or less is enforceable. Doesn't even have to be in writing, but obviously you would put it all in writing as part of a purchase agreement. But you have an actual occupancy agreement that is signed at the time of closing, so that we know that this is how the seller, how possession is being governed and how much the seller is going to pay.
Right. I spelled out, you know, who's paying the house insurance, who's paying for water, electricity, If they don't get out by a certain time, the rent becomes 1.5 times the amount that otherwise would be due.
Okay, just remember, when title transfers, the seller no longer has an insurable interest in the real estate. So
right.
You're not saying, you're having reimbursement.
But the buyer has to insure their property.
Right, buyer has insurance, but you either have a lump sum rental amount, which the seller is paying, or if you're gearing it to expenses, you would include whatever that premium cost is, but it's a reimbursement. They're not paying the insurance, they're actually reimbursing the buyer for the cost of the insurance for the period of time that they are in, that the seller
right.
is in possession.
Right, I'm talking about personal property.
Oh, yeah, to the extent that the seller is keeping their personal property in there, the furniture, all of everything they've got. They have to have a tenant policy.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but these are things that a lot of buyers and sellers don't think about. The reason the buyer ends up getting the insurance is because the mortgage lender is going to require it as a condition of closing. But, you know, I've had cash deals in which they don't think about this thing. The seller simply says, well, I'll keep my insurance in place until I move. Well, you can't do that. There's no insurable interest. So these are things that you need to think about. And the realtor, this Laura, I'm going to give you a word of praise here not just because you were awarded the Realtor of the Year award last Thursday, and we ought to broadcast that widely throughout the community, that Laura was given a very prestigious award from the Jackson Association of Realtors last Thursday. Came as a complete surprise to her, and I actually showed up to surprise her and be in support of her, and I'm standing right in front of her at the wall while she's making her acceptance speech, and guess what? Greg, she didn't thank her husband for the extreme patience and support that he has provided to her over the years so that she could win such an award. Can you believe that?
More importantly, I forgot to thank Jackie.
What do you mean more importantly?
Yeah, he's my right-hand person, so without Jackie, I could not do what I do. So
that's for sure. At any rate, my point here is that one of the keys for both seller and buyer is to have a realtor who actually knows not just the market, but has a clue as to the kinds of considerations that their respective principals, their clients, need to think about. You know, most of these deals don't have lawyers involved. Back when I started 49 years ago, the people who closed real estate transactions were lawyers. It wasn't title companies, it wasn't banks, and it certainly wasn't the realty firm. It was lawyers who closed all these things, and the lawyers had to contemplate what kinds of considerations had to be taken into account. But now lawyers aren't really involved. I don't really do house closings. The only time I get involved in a house closing is if there's some issue, some problem that's created before the closing. And then often, and we're not going to have time today, but next week, put on the docket, I want to talk about home inspections, because I just went through a home inspection issue, and it's distressing to me as to what's going on with it. So.
I'm busy writing that down, Bill.
All right. Yeah, let's make sure we talk about it.
So, all right. Well, so to summarize this, buyers should be really prepared and be really flexible on what they can offer, especially when it comes to possession. It's a huge one. And making sure you've applied for your mortgage and you're ready to rumble.
Well, the other one too is that make sure you don't get caught in a market where you've got multiple offers being made and you end up being sued because one of the deals doesn't fall through. In other words, the claim is that you actually signed multiple offers.
Happens, Bill, so
we can do that one next week or the week thereafter. All right.
All right. Well, and sellers, clean your closets and clean your floors and clean. So. All right, we've got to talk about what's on the market. St. Clair, 184.9, 3-bedroom, 2-bath, large backyard, large garage, great outdoor living space. And that one's that's just a really good property. North of town, convenient to everything, easy access to the highway. Let's see. I've got $600 Royal Drive is a really cute. I think it's less than 100 square feet. 900 square feet. And that one's listed for $110. It's a two-bedroom, one-car attached garage. And that's Blackman Township. Let's see. 609 West Michigan Avenue, $450,000. That's an amazing, one-of-a-kind home. It's a Queen Anne private backyard. It's owned by an artist, so there's some really cool features in there. Five bedrooms, two full baths, a mother-in-law suite, and a great garage that's got a lot of space in it. It used to be an old barn back in the day when you could have barns. That one you've got to see it to believe it. That's just an amazing house. Cooper Street, 1442 Cooper Street's vacant land for $100,000. Seller would consider a land contract. Great visibility from access to I-94, and there's development starting along Cooper, so good time to get in on that property. And we've got our lake property at 8295 South Jackson Road listed. That's just shy of 8 acres on Skiff Lake, 250 feet of frontage, access to a private pond. About 3 to 4 acres are upland. And that's listed for $299,000. And 615 West Franklin is an old gas station, but you can do so much with that. Dance studio. It's an art studio right now. It's on the corner of 4th and Franklin. So it's in a nice little small neighborhood commercial area. I'd love to help you with your real estate needs. So if you're thinking of buying or selling, you should be thinking real estate. Call Laura Dwyer-Schlechte, 780-3800.